Support for Aspen Public Radio comes from Balcom & Green PC, a full-service law firm with offices in Glenwood Springs, Aspen, and Basalt, providing advice and solutions for their clients' legal needs throughout Western Colorado for more than 60 years. Learn more at balcomgreen.com.
Good afternoon from Aspen Public Radio. I'm Allison Bechtesh. This is Valley Roundup. On today's show, my conversation with Aspen's city government reporters as we pick apart the pros and cons of the city's ballot measures. Joining me to speak about the election questions are Carolyn Zachariasen, reporter with the Aspen Times, and Curtis Wackerly, editor of the Aspen Daily News.
Let's jump right into 2D, which is the city offices vote. This is not a yes or no vote. This is an either or vote. So we're going to go through the two options and look at some pros and cons. I should point out that this is a vote that the city has actively avoided several times on voting should the city get new offices. So instead, the phrasing is more, where do you want the new offices to go? And we have an option at the Rio Grande Plaza and on Hopkins Street. And the option that's been on the table the longest is called option B. We have an option A and a B. So actually the one that's been on the table the longest is called option B in this point. And Curtis, I'm going to start with you. Can you explain what that option is? And then we'll get into some pros and cons of that.
You hear this one referred to alternately as the Rio Grande site, maybe the Galena Plaza site, maybe for being really long-winded, on a city-owned parcel in between Rio Grande Park and Galena Plaza. But this is city-owned land. It's the city's owned it for a long time. It's kind of tucked in there next to the library. Currently, the Aspen Chamber Resort Association, well, what used to be their offices, are there. It's right next to the parking garage. ACRA moved out. It's kind of a long story, but this goes back a long ways. And the city, you know, its offices are kind of strewn about town. They fork over $500,000 each year in rent to rent various spaces to meet their needs. So there's been this long-term push to build new office space and kind of consolidate city functions, improve the offices. You know, a lot of the offices in City Hall are pretty funky and, you know, there's not enough hallways and bathrooms and conference rooms. And so they're trying to upgrade that. So this has been discussed for a long, long time. The city at one point was going to build a 50-some-odd thousand square foot building on this land that was going to be everything. It was going to be all of City Hall, and they were going to give the armory to some community purpose use that that was being advocated for. You might remember we actually had an election on that, and people supported that. But
it was an advisory vote.
Only an advisory vote.
As this is, too.
As this is, too. But there's a little bit more on the table here that we'll discuss. And so anyway, the Galena site, option B, would be a new building that we think is around 37 some odd thousand square feet, and it would connect on the middle level to this other, the Rio Grande building, you know, where Tasters is, to that existing building, which would then, you know, part of it would be refurbished to be included as part of this offices. There'd be something like 40,000 square feet over there on that site for new offices, most of it being new construction. This plan was passed by the council after a long process of a lot of back and forth, a lot of vetting, a lot of meetings over many years. In April of 2017, the city council approved it. Now, right out of the gate, you had some people who didn't like this project. They don't like that it's a big building on this land that's right next to the park. They don't like especially that it's three stories. So when you're standing on Rio Grande Park and you're looking toward Aspen Mountain, you're going to see three stories. And of course, the city has made its height limits more restrictive, so you cannot build three stories anymore. Like, if you're a private developer, three stories is not an option for you, but the city has preserved that option for itself on this particular land because it's, you know, it's a public project.
Central public facility.
Central public facility. So right out of the gate, you had opposition who wanted this to be a referendum that the public got to vote on. They went and gathered signatures. They tried to force it onto the ballot. They made some procedural mistakes. They were late. The city would not allow the vote. It was this long. It was a lawsuit that consumed a lot of our attention as City Hall reporters over the last year. You know, there was a lot that happened there. But the bottom line is we got to a point where there were some rulings going in either side's favor, but the judge issued a ruling that was a big win for the city, and these guys decided to sort of settle this case by having this either-or lawsuit. So instead of the up-or-down vote they wanted on this project, you get the either-or between this or Hopkins Avenue.
Well, let's switch to Hopkins then, and then let's get to the pros and cons of each of this. So what is, in the midst of all this lawsuit stuff going on, the city thinks maybe we should shop around for a different
building. So that's what they do. They approached developer Mark Hunt, who owns the building across the way from City Hall on Hopkins Avenue. It's the old Aspen Daily News building. Oh, sorry, excuse me.
Airplane mode.
Sorry about that. So Mark owns that building, and he's wanted the city to move in there before. The city engineering department was a tenant there, mm-hmm. and even in 2015, he envisioned the city offices to be on the second floor. So he offered up that building, which will be redeveloped, to the city, along with the building next door, which is only a couple of inches from the Daily News building, where the Aspen Kitchen restaurant is. So all combined, it is just shy of 27,000 square feet.
Okay.
And he's offering it, the city entered into a real estate contract in July, did due diligence. They extended the contract when they realized they needed more space. That's when they added the kitchen restaurant space. So he said, here, do this then. I have tenants, but I'm trying to offer a solution here. A lot of people are trying to say that he can't get a tenant and that sort of thing. And whether that's true or not, who knows. But he's offering it for $32.5 million.
Okay.
And it's a turnkey space. So up to $100 a square foot, the city can build out however they'd like, whatever the specs are. Anything over that, the city would pay. So that's option A. So proponents are, thinking that that's better because it's closer to the city. Right. There's no new development. It's already going to be redeveloped anyway.
So Curtis, the city didn't want to have a vote asking voters, should we get new space? Even though we need it, we're renting it, we're spending tons mm-hmm. of money, and we're short space. But now this is kind of a win for the city because they've made two deals with both Mark Hunt and with the litigants, right? Where mm-hmm. let's put it to the voters and right. either way, case closed on this contract
or
this lawsuit.
One way or another, they get their new office space and they don't have to have the voters say yes or no to whether or not they want new space. And a lot of people are like, well, I don't think the city needs more space. Mm-hmm. The city would argue the other way.
Yeah, I mean, they spend $500,000 a year on rent. At like six different locations,
mm-hmm. But yeah. So now we have to debate these two merits that, in a lot of ways, there's good and bad arguments for both of them.
Why is option B good? Why would it be good to build out the Rio Grande place?
Because it's land the city already owns, and you're not making this deal with the developer. Which, by the way, the appraisers are already saying we're overpaying for it.
Yeah.
So how we mentioned there's two buildings. The appraiser appraised one of the two buildings on Hopkins Avenue. Who Randy Gold said it was worth $18 to $20 million. What the city's planning to pay $23 million for. So at least $3 to $5 million over what the assessor says it's worth. Now we're paying $9.5 million if this goes through for the Aspen Kitchen space. That appraisal is pending, and chances are the appraiser's going to say it's not worth that much. It's 5,000 square feet. I mean, and so then you're getting into one of the other reasons why you might want to just build on the land the city already owns. This is commercial space that mm-hmm. That was designed to house private businesses, and people will make the argument that when the city goes in there and overpays for this real estate, you're basically putting more pressure on commercial rents in town. You're making it more expensive mm-hmm. for everyone else. If the city wasn't going to do this, Mark Hunt would have to go out on the free market and rent it to someone who's willing to pay what they think it's worth as a commercial tenant. A government organization is probably the top person you want to sell it to if you're the developer. Right, and it's making it easier for Hunt because he's selling it as opposed to having to lease it and manage it for years and years to come. The city's going to take care of the affordable housing. If Hunt has to keep with the commercial tenants there and doesn't make this deal with the city, he's got a huge housing mitigation mm-hmm. he has to provide. That goes away if the city buys it. And the other con that's out there for the Hopkins Avenue space is you're still a few thousand square feet short of what you need, and so the city is still going to renovate and have some offices in the Rio Grande building and where that Acra space is. That'll probably become Acra again.
Okay.
So there are still going to be some.
There's a version where Hopkins wins, and mm-hmm. then the city space still occupies some of the area around the parking garage or Tasters or something.
There'll still be something there.
Okay.
But to flip it around to talk about why you want to vote for Hopkins Avenue, you know, it is right across the street. That's really attractive to some people.
Okay.
It's a fixed price contract. You know, if we build on Galena, that's the city's deal. They've estimated it now to cost around $26 million. That's just an estimate. There's no contract. Those costs could escalate. City projects have escalated in the past beyond initial estimates. And really, one of the main arguments you're hearing is that you're saving that land. That Rio Grande land could become something else in the future. It makes a lot of sense for the city to land bank it, not sterilize it with offices. Maybe you could have something cooler there. Maybe you could have some affordable housing. Maybe you could have some sort of commercial something that we want. And, you know, offices are just so boring. why are you going to use this beautiful, huge site that the city owns that we'll never get back once that becomes city offices?
So, Carolyn, the people who didn't want the building on Rio Grande Place took issue with the government giving themselves variances that they don't give to commercial development. Will they be allowed to do that when they build up this Hopkins space, too? Could that somehow become a three-story building?
No, that would not be.
Okay.
Would not be.
That's the other, that's but a big
they
pro
They can't
for
grant themselves
right. But
there's variances.
No affordable housing or mitigation. Mm-hmm. There's no, you know, there's new development at Rio Grande. That would be new development.
Okay.
New construction.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But they wouldn't mitigate for employees that are generated from that construction or that project.
Right. The city's not going to do that either way.
Either way.
Because they say, you know, they've built all this housing at Burlingame and what, you know, so they argue that they have all these credits from all the housing they've built over the years, that means they don't have to build new housing when they do a new project.
I just see the people who were against the building at Galena Plaza being against a Hopkins building for similar reasons if it doesn't fit the character of what they see the town to be. We don't know what that building will ultimately look like.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Okay.
Correct. It'll look like an office building with some fancy retail shops on the street level.
And did you have more reasons pro choice A, pro why would someone vote for the new city offices being on Hopkins?
Well, there's also the renovation of City Hall. So in that real estate contract that Mark Hunt has signed with the city of Aspen, he said, hey, because I'm a developer and I'm doing all these different projects, there's economies of scale here, and I can renovate City Hall for cheaper than you can.
Okay.
So I'll do it for around $12 million. And the city is estimating that their renovation for that building would be 15.8 or 16 million. Of course, construction costs are going up 10% annually. So we really don't know what these numbers are. I think for the voters, it's a location issue and not so much money.
Okay.
You know, the one roof solution way back at the beginning of time, it feels like, was the cheapest option, but the city went with a two roof because, you know, it was appeasing more people.
Right, and they wanted to keep city offices in the historic armory where they're located now. I think just on that point, there were a lot of questions about if you turn the armory into a public use, is that going to require a long-term subsidy?
You are listening to Valley Roundup on Aspen Public Radio. I'm Allison Bechtesh. This week, I'm speaking with Carolyn Zachariasen, reporter with the Aspen Times, and Curtis Wackerly, editor of the Aspen Daily News, about ballot questions City of Aspen voters will decide this fall. You can also watch this discussion, filmed by Grassroots TV, on aspenpublicradio.org. Let's come back to that vote, that advisory vote in 2015, where the public said, we want the armory for our own use. We want to be able to have nonprofits do shows or performances there. We want to have a community meeting space or a co-work space. Give us that building. Then the city decided not to do that after all, because it was an advisory vote. As you mentioned, this is also an advisory vote. How much does city council or city hall have to stick with what the voters decide this November?
So they don't, but if they do not go with what the voters say, then the lawsuit is back on the table.
Even if the voters go with Hopkins, which was what the litigants would like, goes with Rio Grande, but then the city council on their own decides to go with Hopkins, then they've gotten their way out of that.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. I guess I hadn't really thought of that, but
So they don't have to, like, this again is like kind of we want to feel out what the citizens want. Mm-hmm. It's mm-hmm. the easiest way to say, no matter what, when we're building ourselves something new and shiny, you guys are the ones who told us to do this.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Right. Right. Definitely. It puts it on the citizens instead of the council.
Mm-hmm. Other final thoughts on this measure for the Aspen voters to decide where city offices go?
No, I mean, you have council members arguing for and against. Bert Myron is against the Rio Grande
mm-hmm.
building.
Mm-hmm.
He would like to see affordable housing there.
Okay.
I think everybody else on council wants that space there. I mean, one other thing that city employees have said, and there's over 300 of them, and they should be able to work in a nice place too, mm-hmm. they say. The Hopkins option puts a lot of them in subterranean space.
Either subterranean or it's kind of shoot, because Hunt keeps okay. keeps this nice street level, street facing retail spaces. The offices are behind that, kind of facing the alley.
Okay.
Then you get the whole second floor, which does have some nice, that's where we used to work at the Aspen Daily News. It has some okay. nice, there's some nice light. There's
yeah.
some, you know, you're facing north there. And then you have this ups, you know, then you have the space that the Aspen kitchen restaurant used to
great
be.
Great views, yeah, that
are
patio.
Are they keeping that patio, by the way?
No, I think they close it
they
all
close
in.
That all,
yeah.
They close that all out?
Right.
Okay, so.
So
it is, the configuration will be a lot more tricky if you're trying to put it in 517-204, I think.
Okay.
There definitely is some underground space there. They say it's going to be storage or maybe a meeting room or something like that.
Until the one employee in their stapler gets sent right. down there. and as you said, it changes the supply and demand availability of commercial mm-hmm. space in town, right? Like we already know right. that we're not getting local businesses because they can't mm-hmm. afford rent, and that's a supply and demand issue.
He would not be renting it to a local retailer. Mm-hmm. It would be a bank, most
the retailers, right? Yeah,
you
and
know,
who knows
that second level, our old office.
Okay.
Space.
Yeah.
He probably wouldn't have some, you know, some. I mean, who knows what's going to go in there?
Right.
They have talked about how in the basement it could be like a fitness yoga studio kind of thing, and instead of the city offices, I don't know.
Okay. We're going to move on to 2A, which moves the election date from when it currently is municipal elections, mm-hmm. the just Aspen issues, mm-hmm. our Aspen elected officials, moves that date from May to March with the idea that more people will be here to mm-hmm. vote in March. So let's go over some pros and cons of mm-hmm. this. Curtis, why would that be a good thing?
The reason to vote for this is because maybe it just doesn't make a lot of sense to have your election in pretty much the lowest occupancy time of year. I mean, it's obvious when you're here in early May, it's pretty dead. Half the restaurants are closed. Lots of people are taking trips out of town, and so if you move it up to a more high profile time of year, more people in town, you're just gonna get more people. And having it in May arguably disenfranchises a large part of the community who is not in town at that time of year. And so why not make it easier for them to vote? Like, yeah, sure, you can, you know, you can mail in your ballot. There's 3 weeks of early voting. But if you're out of town during those weeks, it's harder for you to vote. You know, it's easier to forget. When there's more people in town, you're going to get higher participation in elections. And that that's a good thing is the argument for moving it.
Zach, why would not do that then? Let's get more people voting.
Well, as you said, the other side of that would be you do have 3 weeks mm-hmm. to vote. It is an all mail-in election, so it's never been easier to vote. If you're going to be overseas, you can plan for that mm-hmm. and you can get an overseas ballot. Mm-hmm. So they accommodate you in many ways to do this. Other people have said, you know, you push that whole campaign further back. So
okay.
you're going to declare a candidacy during the holidays. Which, who's got time to do that? And then, you know, vetting the issues and having that debate now becomes January, February.
Right, it becomes a seven-week thing in the middle of the season
right.
when
people are super busy.
Are busy.
And are they really paying attention? And when it's in April, when most of that debate is happening,
okay.
it's mm-hmm. like, those are only the headlines, usually.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot more mm-hmm. focus on what the debate is. Mm-hmm. So I've heard that argument. And it's just campaigning is hard to do, and so you're going to be knocking on doors and you know, January and February, and people aren't going to be home. They're out working and whatnot. So I should note that I've did a little bit of research with the city clerk's office, and we've voted on this before, and just very quickly, in April of 1971, they voted, should they move the May election to November, and it won, they said no to that, and then in May of 89, they asked the same question, should we move the May election to November, and 1,000 people said yes, and 932 said no, and then before that November could come, they had a special election in July to move it back to May, which won out. 342 people to 175. So that's, you see how many people are voting in July when town is busy. So,
interesting.
You know, it's hard to determine. But the point is that in May, I think our voter turnout is around 35% to 40%. We have 6,400
really low
registered voters.
Right.
And we wonder, do people even care? Do they really care? Yeah. About voting their city council people?
It is funny because it seems like a really big issue, and then you take it down to this is only people who are registered to vote within the city of Aspen. So you have, like, you better not have somewhere else where you live and prefer to vote there, which I think a lot of residents, if you look at the residences in Aspen, if those are second, third, fourth homes, they're not registering to vote here. If you're a part-time employee and you are here, you're part of what's making that town more crowded during that on season. You're probably not living within city limits. If you're you know, Skeeko housing in the Commons, if you're down valley somewhere, you're not a City of Aspen voter. So is the issue that the people who are registered to vote here bad at participating, or can they not participate?
Or would it be, you know, would more of them participate if the election wasn't happening in the dead of the off season? You are hearing an interesting debate. You know, some people have given voice to this that, you know, maybe it's better to have our elections during the time of year when there's not seasonal employees in town.
Right.
When, you know, if you have it in May, some people have voiced concern that you'll have all these seasonal employees who will register to vote kind of at the last minute. You know, maybe the Skeeko has a hotel on the ballot or something, and that it'll somehow be used to swing the election. That's a very controversial argument. You know, that's basically saying that there's certain people out there that shouldn't vote who legally could, and that's pretty shaky ground to be standing on.
Yeah.
I think you can just as easily make the case that there's a lot of people who do work in the service industry. They work in seasonal jobs, but they're just as local as the lawyers and the government employees that are definitely here in May.
Right. Or not. I mean, I think if you work full-time year-round and you are one of these kind of like fancy jobs, you probably have more means to travel.
Right.
You know, in the off season than those of us who are the lowly work all the year round jobs.
Right. And so how many are there really, is this really this base of you know, people who aren't really locals who are here seasonally who could swing an election? I think it's highly debatable because most of them probably, you know, there's very few that actually do live in Aspen.
I think that bankers and lawyers take vacations in February too.
Yeah.
And in
okay.
March. Mm-hmm. They don't necessarily, you know, it doesn't matter.
But it does condense the campaign. That would be an interesting dynamic to see what happens when the campaign basically, because it's not like anything's really going to happen during the holidays.
Okay.
People get back from the holidays. You have 8 weeks.
Yeah.
And then we vote in early March.
And as you pointed out when we were all chatting about this earlier, if this passes in November, you better get your city council pack it in sometime in December order to be voted on in March.
Right.
At some point, we would have a new rotation of when city council seats are switch over. So someone serving now, I think, would have a shorter term, or someone would start a little earlier than you would have thought because of these days. And what does that mean for our fiscal year, for our top 10 goals, for all those things, if you started this new council discussing things a couple months earlier?
Right. Yeah, you will have, there'll be a time where there will be like a long, lame duck term for whoever is still on council
after their rotation off.
Right,
yeah.
After this mail.
Anybody who's in office now will stay in until June.
Okay.
Right. We elected them to stay in until June of 2019.
But I want to bring up, again, so I think we have seen that discussion, so let's talk about it, that this is a way for corporate interests to win out over locals because someone like Skeeko, some big businesses who have employees just during some time of the year, can get their employees to register to vote here in the city of limits, in the city of Aspen limits, and tell them how to vote, and they will do that. I mean, it's multiple tiers of kind of paranoia.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they say that this happened with the Base Village vote in Snowmass in 2004. I don't know, I wasn't here, but there were all sorts of accusations that second homeowners were being encouraged to register to vote in Snowmass just so they could vote for Base Village and let the development go forward. Mm-hmm. So that's an example that gets pointed to.
All right, so when it comes down to it, when someone goes into the poll, into the voting booth, what are they deciding between for a yes, no vote or a no vote on this election date issue?
Do you think that local democracy will function better if election is held right in the middle of the peak season in March as opposed to in the off season in May?
It makes sense if it's more people in town, more people mm-hmm. will vote. I mean, it's simple math,
right?
That, but you know, when you look at the historic numbers, you're like, well, it's all over the map. Who knows whether that's going to be the case or not?
And so the only way to know is would be to try, right? Like if
sure.
it's as easy as revoting it back.
Right, we can always just move it back.
Right? Wait, are you planning your vacation anytime soon? So how you vote.
But also, do you buy into this? If you really care about the issues, you will figure out a way to vote in May, whenever the election is, so there's no point in monkeying around with this.
I mean, I'm trying to picture the trips that people take, because it's not like you're going to your villa in France and you know the address and you're going to have your ballot sent there, right? Mm-hmm. You're road tripping across mm-hmm. the Southwest, you're going
Maybe.
Across Europe, you're surfing in Bali, right. Whatever people do in the off season, mm-hmm. I don't know that you have an address that you know where to send it to weeks before you go on vacation in order
right.
to make sure it's there and you mm-hmm. have the time to send it back.
If the lifts stop spinning on April 15th or 20th, are people leaving on the 16th or the 21st, right?
And some people do.
Right, they do. Yep. And so by then, the ballots have not been mailed. Mm-hmm. I don't People, you know, there's a short window there mm-hmm. where you might miss the ballot. And I have to say, I've done this before.
Right.
I've gone on vacation, forgot to take my ballot and bring it over to the city clerk's office. And, you know, turned out it was a pretty close vote.
And
so
that's the other point, is how many are. So the proponents of moving the election date have this little fact sheet out that the elections that have been decided an under 2% difference are things like Skadden versus Tory for mayor. 23
runoffs.
City council races mm-hmm. were decided within 2%. Mm-hmm. And then some ballot initiatives, like this, both straight shot votes, the Red Brick, the Wheeler, the Red. So that, you know, when we're in this margin of error, maybe if we get more people here, mm-hmm. we would have a more decisive, like, mm-hmm. this is what the people want. And I think why this is such a prickly issue is not the pragmatics of, like, which date is better, but I think there's an inherent question in this as to, like, who's really an Aspenite? Whose voice really matters? And I think mm-hmm. that's why it's touching people so hard.
Mm-hmm. Right. And like we said earlier when we were talking that, you know, this is being pushed by a group that's fairly young. There's
right.
a couple old-timers there in there. So is it a young versus old? I mean, this has come up before. This is not even beyond these actual votes. The topic of moving the election
okay.
has come up a couple times.
Yeah.
From people who've kind of swooped into town, been here a year or two, and, you know, think that they can change the dynamics. But it never got to the level of actually a citizen petition to get on
right.
a ballot.
Which is a good thing to point out, right? That this is the reason we're voting on this is because so many people
yeah.
think that it's worth at least asking mm-hmm. that they signed on to get
they
the
had
petition.
To get a, yeah,
it
they had
a,
to get a 10%
a
threshold, right? It was 10% of registered voters
mm-hmm.
they had to get
signatures
for.
I think it was just 5% because it's a charter
sure.
amendment.
This is election coverage from the Aspen Times, from the Aspen Daily News, from Grassroots TV and Aspen Public Radio. I'm Allison Bechtesh, joined today by Curtis Wackerly, editor of the Aspen Daily News, and Carolyn Zachariasen with the Aspen Times. Thank you both so much for doing all the research and keeping us informed going into election season.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Allison.
You've been listening to Valley Roundup on Aspen Public Radio. I'm Allison Bechtesh. Thanks to Grassroots TV, Carolyn Zachariasen of the Aspen Times, and Curtis Wackerly of the Aspen Daily News. Valley Roundup is a production of Aspen Public Radio News.